Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. We will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat, or just because they're a Republican, and you voted that way your entire life, maybe you were wrong. Because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there who are working for your benefit, and we are going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them. We're going to ask them questions. We're going to let you ask them questions. And we're going to be discussing education system, the military, science, music, sports, oh, and health care. Do you have it? Do you need it? Are your 26-year-olds still on the family health care plan? Or, as the regressive party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word. And everything from the cities, counties, state, nation, the entire world. So sit down and get a pencil, paper, and take this graduate education experience. And we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson.
Want to know what it is. The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room.
You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work,
when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself. This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes. Remember, all I'm offering is the truth, nothing more. Follow me.
And that's just what happened to all these QAnon dumbbells that are out there. All these QAnon muskrats. The problem is Donald Orange Man jumpsuit Trump was not the correct person to tell us to go in one direction or the other. He was the devil. Now, let me explain this. You know, of course, the devil doesn't make you do anything that you do not want to do. How many people have seen the Lucifer on TV? He said, you caused this. You, no, hey, I'm just the guy that controls, I'm just the guy that controls the hell. I don't make people do what they want to do. If you want to be a muskrat and a QAnon, you go ahead and do it. I just take care of you after you've done the stupid things. That's how it works. And these people have done the stupid thing. They have taken what this man, you remember what the Hamlet looked like with the mask on and covered the bottom half of his face and just saw his eyes and his messed up teeth. That's what this guy, Donald J. Trump, did. He was a man, supposedly a man, with a mask. Supposedly a man with small fingers, as Marco Rubio said. You should recognize that when he had the small fingers, that there was something wrong. He was not really a full-grown man yet. He was something taken over the body of a man. And you let this man get into our Constitution and try to rip it apart. And you stood right there, many of you, who didn't even vote. So I like what he says. He's strong. Yeah, he's strong. Yeah, he'll come back and bite your ass too. Because he doesn't care about anybody else. He cares about the orange man who's doing the deed. He doesn't care about you. But you people were so inept and wanted to be so on top, better than your brothers and sisters on this planet, who he said, don't worry about those little picky people. They will be out of the way as soon as I get in power. When I came down that escalator, I told you what I was going to do. And you all said, yeah, that's what we want. We want a strong leader. A strong leader. Oh, but see, he's not like Theodore Roosevelt, walk softly and carry a big stick. No. He was walk hard and beat everything in your way. There's no such thing. You do it my way or it's the highway. Absolutely. That's what it turned out to be.
He's just a face painted on a smile, jumping up and down and making
people happy.
Circus, Donald J. Orange Man Drump wanted to make it like a three-ring circus. His whole life has been flim-flam, grifting. He used his $1 million that his father gave him to start his business and spent it up on double cheeseburgers and limousine rides. Who the hell has a casino and cheats the people? You don't have to cheat the people. People lose. They come there. They want to give the money to you. But he made it worse. Taj Mahal was a corrupt institution. That's why it's no longer in existence. Steaks, water, universities, all grifting. Get money from the people. Give the people a laugh. Which what he has done now. But he ran into the wrong party eventually. A lady named Letitia James, New York State Attorney General, who said, and she did say about 5-6 years ago, when I get elected, I will make sure that this corrupt mongrel is put in his place. And she just wasn't after him. Hey, she got the Democratic governor, got him taken out. But all along, she was still working slowly on this corrupt mongrel of a supposedly leader. This man, remember, from his eyes down, he had the mask on, just like Hannibal Lecter. People just did not believe this man because they did not want to believe him, because he promised to give them more than they ever had, more than they deserved. Hey, everybody deserves something. And these people have been cheated all their life, so they've been told by this orange man. You have been cheated your whole life. You had the people from foreign countries come in and take your country away from you. Well, this wasn't their country. This is the American Indians' country. We took it from them. So it's the survival of the fittest. Is that what it is? Well, then, you know what? You've lost. You people that were here have lost. And it's time for the people of the next generation to take over, which they are doing, which they have done since the end of the Depression, on up now, and 10 years from now, you'll be like a whisper. That's right. Hope I'm around. I'll be around, because I want to see it. And they will be talking about the orange man in the jumpsuit. But you see, hey, we don't have to have him in a jumpsuit. We just need to take away all his money, ill-gotten gains. And eventually, I've been saying this for weeks and for months and for years, racketeering is going to be the final club in the head. And she has started the date. Because racketeering will start from the date they start looking you up. And she said 2011, they've been looking up to 2011 to get stuff on them. And guess what? Guess what? This man is, you know, he said, well, they all do this in New York City. No, they don't. They might say, hey, my property is worth $50,000. And they will claim it when they want to sell it. $100,000. So they'll make it double the price. But this man is so outlandish. He said, why should I ever give anything to anybody? Why should I settle for less in everything? This is what I don't understand. Why should I settle for less than whatever I can get? If I can cheat these people and get more, why can't I do that? I don't see. I can't see why. What did he say when he interviewed him? Well, hey, all my papers, when I give my taxes in to be done, it says, do not listen to me. Everything I'm submitting to you may be wrong, but we're telling you right now that they're wrong. Can you believe that? And that's supposed to be okay. But you know what the government says? No, your job is to make sure that we get the correct information from the very beginning. Don't tell us, hey, we told you that the story might not be true. Don't tell us that. That has nothing to do with anything. Don't tell us that the story might not be true. It's not our job. Our job is to make sure that you don't cheat the rest of the people of the state or the country. She's only concerned with the state. As Donald Trump said, all of the people, all of the time. How Donald Trump fooled the media, used the media to fool banks, hoodwink banks, bondholders, to pay for his vacations, his yachts, and his mansions, and his mistresses. All of the people, all of the time. I mean, Letitia James, the other day when she came out, she just didn't say, oh, yeah, he did this, and we're going to get him for fraud. No, she went down specifically and said certain things. She went in depth, which he cannot deny. For instance, Mar-a-Lago. The real value of that property has been estimated at $75 million. When he put it on his accounts to get more credit and more influence and better rates, he says it's worth $739 million. And then the other thing is that those supposed to be, that's a club. That's not a residence. You're not supposed to be living there. It is just a club that people come to once or twice or three times a year. It is not meant for a residence. So when he's living there using that for an address, it's illegal. Another thing, Trump Park Avenue. Park Avenue. $84.5 million is the real value of that property. What did he inflated to $135.8 million. This is the stuff she's speaking of off the top of her head. This is in black and white. This is what he put down. He's responsible for it, not his accountants. Another place. Trump Seven Springs. He's been trying. That's a place up in the going upstate in New York. He wanted to, make this fabulous. The real estimated price is $75 million for the property. But he couldn't sell it. He wanted to change the regulations of roads around the place where he could make it. They wouldn't let him do it. He put the value at $735 million. And here's the thing. He just didn't try to bump it up a couple of million dollars. He bumped up tenfold. This is why they're going to get him. All the real estate brokers may be cheating too, but they're not pushing it up to $10 million, $20 million, $30 million, $40 million, $100 million, $700 million more than what it's worth. And he was warned, don't go and run for a president because you will be under worse scrutiny than you've ever been. But he knew more than everybody. And why hasn't he been forced to give a critical, why hasn't he been forced under our Constitution to be arrested? Do you know that you cannot have had a critical and secret clearance before? Donald Trump had never had one until he became president. He never deserved, he would never get one. But he only got one because he was president. That's all. He was, they did the secret, the investigation of him, and he wasn't not worth it. He shouldn't have gotten one. I want to go over this one thing about the explanation of cost of these properties. Let's see what you say.
For the former president. The big one is the New York Attorney General taking him to court, demanding sanctions, $250 million specifically, in penalties, Attorney General James saying that the Trump family and organization have committed massive and repeat fraud. And we're going to walk through this. You may have heard the news yesterday, and a lot of it focused on the law, her powers, what she's doing. There hasn't been as much time to really make sense of the evidence in her 220-page filing. And so just briefly here to start the broadcast, I wanted to do that with you. Look at Mar-a-Lago, which of course is in the nexus of multiple legal issues, and we'll get to those tonight. But in the New York case, which deals with Donald Trump's fraud in more than one place, Mar-a-Lago down in Florida has an actual property value of $75 million. What you see on the left there is what Letitia James says is, all things considered, the rough actual truth, a value of $75 million. Now, you might notice when you look at this bar chart here that it seems really kind of low, and that's because of what you're about to see. To leave room for the Trump claims, you really have to build a giant chart where the Trump organization made claims, legally binding, that this was worth $739 million. That's not a bit above or double. It is, as you see, about nine times more than, according to the case, what the AG says it's worth. So it is false, as best anyone can tell. It certainly has never fetched $739 million or anything close to that in a sale. What you're seeing on your screen in simple form, which I'm leading the newscast with because it's this important, is a piece of evidence for dismantling the Trump organization. If this evidence holds and a judge signs off on it, then you can see Trump and his family banned from running any corporation in New York. Okay, consider that Exhibit A. Now let's go to Trump Park Avenue Apartments, a unit there reportedly worth about $750,000. Again, you'll notice, and I'm showing you this because it matters, and we didn't even have time to get to it in our breaking coverage yesterday, it looks like a sliver. You might say, well, why is that, Ari? Well, we're going to show you why. Trump claimed it was worth not double, triple, no, $50 million. All right, you're starting to get the pattern. We're not going to do this forever, but let me show you 40 Wall Street. You don't have to ever set foot in New York to know that Wall Street is a coveted area, and yes, you can sell things for a lot of money there. The idea that a building goes for $220 million, I mean, in most towns in America, that's unfathomable right there. So that's a lot of money. That's what it's roughly worth according to the new case. But Trump pushed and pushed it up to half a billion or more, $530 million. Now, each of those instances I showed you broken out, those are some of the more egregious. I will say, as a matter of precision and fairness, there are other examples in the case that are not quite that strong or egregious. But when you count them up, it's not 5 or 10 of those, or even 20, where a company might plausibly say to the judge, hey, you know, we do a lot of deals. This is 20 out of 1,000, yada, yada. No. This new case, putting this heat on Trump and his family, has about 200 alleged instances of this kind of fraud with receipts. And that's part of why the worst news for Donald Trump isn't even in the AG's office. It's in the other offices she's sent to. Criminal referrals for this kind of chicanery, if you will, to the feds and SDNY, that's in the New York federal office, and the IRS. So that is just a sampling of the evidence. Yesterday we showed you a lot of the law, what this means. Tonight we lead with the evidence and we go to someone who knows exactly how to sift this evidence, Asha Rangappa, former FBI special agent in counterintel, a lawyer, and a Yale University lecturer. Welcome back.
Thank you, Ari.
I mentioned those, and our producers were working to take the data out of the case and turn it into those charts, and we can put one or two of them back up. It seems to me that a lot of people would give you kind of a pass, and people could become jurors if you round up 10-20%. And a lot of people think about a car dealership like, okay, let's say 0 to 60 in 4 seconds, it was really 6 seconds, okay, is that fraud? This looks like James has evidence that the habit was not just a little roundup, but what you see here, really ripping people off and lying to the government.
Yes, Ari, and I think what the complaint makes clear is that there were very deliberate financial shenanigans and misrepresentations and fuzzy math that's going on. So with the Mar-a-Lago building, for example, I'm not a forensic accountant, but I was able to follow generally what was happening behind the scenes based on what's being described in the complaint. So Mar-a-Lago is a huge building, and basically Trump, in acquiring that, acknowledged that it could not be used as a residential property, right? And so this is why it is a club. And he personally signed off on this with the city. And what's happening is that although he's operating it as a club, he is valuing it as this enormous residential property. He also signed off certain easements to the city, which basically gives him a tax break, but then creates other restrictions on what he can do with the property, which also lowers the value, but then doesn't acknowledge that those restrictions exist when he's, you know, having the property valued for purposes of his financial statement. And so he's also double dipping because he adds for Mar-a-Lago what he calls a brand premium because it's operating as a club, even though he's listing it as a residential property. And so the net effect of all of this is that this gross inflation, I think your chart makes it clear, and more than that, that these representations are then being used to obtain loans, to get insurance at different rates.
And
so,
Asha,
it's a fraud.
It ain't even my chart. Like, it's his numbers.
That's correct.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's not just the false valuation, it's the use of them to obtain financial benefits. And I think the big takeaways, if you look at all of these different valuations, are a few things. First, that Trump is directing, you know, the people under him to make sure the value of all his properties are going up. The second is that they have two sets of books, that for many of these properties, they're getting official appraisals that are telling them that they're valued at a low amount, and then representing that they're valued higher. So the knowledge is there. And then in addition, his children, there's a whole section at the end that they too are personally involved in creating these valuations and certifications as well.
Right. I mean, look, everyone's had a couple years of COVID practice. If you don't know you have COVID and you go somewhere and you become a super spreader, you go to work, whatever, you don't know. Once you find out you have it, that changes everything. And you don't find it out by thinking about it or, you know, sniffling. You get a test or you get a medical professional. Where am I going with this? What you just said seems to be so damning for them in the case and what a judge is going to look at, which is they're actually told, here, it's X. And then they go out and misrepresent it as Y. And that's fundamentally different, right, than someone who wants to defend and say, I didn't know, I put a number on it, okay, so sue me. Well, they are suing him, but sue me, I really didn't know what it's worth. It's all a craps game until you get a buyer. A lot of Americans have experience in the homeowner's market, right? You say, well, what's it worth? We don't know. No, it's the opposite. You know exactly what it was estimated at, and then you wildly lied about it. I want to get your response to Laura Trump speaking out today. Here she was.
Sadly, this has become commonplace for all of us in the Trump family, this sort of treatment and investigation and these allegations that always end up being false. And you know what? We're holding up fine because we know that there was no wrongdoing, that no, you know, nothing happened here.
I would love for you to contrast or walk us through the difference between what she's saying on Fox in a sort of a, you know, a sort of a MAGA snowflake bubble, where you're not going to be triggered, you're not going to be pressed. And shout out to anyone who needs a bubble. You know, you can live in a snowflake bubble if you want. How do you contrast that to the fact that Donald Trump fought ever answering any questions about the facts or whether there was anything wrong or what the details were? And then James Wan dragged him in and he had to plead the Fifth Amendment for criminal liability rather than just say, and again, it's my job. When I cover a case, I love to cover both sides. I love to be able to say, and their response is this. We still don't have much of a detailed response from him because he pled the Fifth. How do you contrast Laura's PR message in the bubble to Donald Trump's inability or unwillingness on the advice of counsel to even speak about what he was up to?
Well, I think what you say under oath matters a lot. And there are, in the complaint, it states certain questions to which Trump claim the Fifth. And these were pretty direct questions. For example, did you direct Weisselberg to make sure that the value of your properties increased every year? I plead the Fifth. I mean, that's an easy no if you didn't do it, right? And so, and that goes to the heart of his own participation and knowledge of the scheme. I think it's also just the sheer number of properties. This isn't even just a one-off of, you know, just Trump Tower or Mar-a-Lago. This is across. This is a pattern and practice of how he's doing it. And Ari, don't forget that just a few years ago, New York dissolved his charitable foundation because of financial mismanagement, that they were taking in charitable donations and spending it on portraits and appropriating it. And that was dissolved. His children actually had to go to financial remedial training to learn how to become trustees. Obviously, that didn't work very well.
That raises the deeper question. Can you be taught to be charitable if it's not in your nature?
Yeah, it's more that they don't understand how to be fiduciaries to act within the rules. And I think it's a microcosm. When you read this complaint, it's really a microcosm of what we saw over 4 years in the government. If you've been operating your whole life where you can just make up your own rules and live in your own fantasy world, this is what got translated into the Oval Office. And trying to bend laws and reality and institutions in order to create what he thought it should be as opposed to what our norms and laws and constitution says it is.
Yeah.
All right. So you heard that, right? I mean, this week was a major, major, major. I mean, one thing I wish... We stop calling his Molary and Curly his children. Want to say adult children, if you want to use the word children. They're not kids. They're not people who just don't know enough because they're too young. They were the vice presidents running his organization. Absolutely. And we need to hear what Letitia James says.
Nice to see you. Welcome to The Beat. I am Ari Melber. We have this breaking news on legal action hitting Trump. New York Attorney General Letitia James today suing Donald Trump, three of his children, and his entire company. This is new. It builds on things you've heard about, but it is a culmination of this investigation she has so doggedly pursued. We're going to get into it with our experts. Let me tell you, James is saying Trump has committed, quote, staggering fraud, that he lied about the value of his properties, that he lied to the authorities, that he lied in financial statements, that he did it for over a decade, and that he furnished, and this matters for the law, false information to banks, insurance companies, as well as state authorities, and then he would try to get favorable loans and cheat on his taxes.
Pattern of fraud and deception that was used by Mr. Trump and the Trump Organization for their own financial benefit is astounding. Claiming you have money that you do not have does not amount to the art of the deal. It's the art of the steal. And there cannot be different rules for different people in this country or in this state. And former presidents are no different. No one is above the law.
Above the law.
That is the statement. That is the Attorney General who has proven so aggressive in so many cases without fear or favor. She's pursued people in both parties. And while the nature of her work means that some of this is vaguely familiar, especially to people in New York and people who follow legal news, but really around the country, you might say, didn't I hear about this before? Haven't I heard about the asset valuation? Haven't I heard about, basically, that he's under investigation? Well, everything just changed with this case. It is the culmination. It is a bigger legal problem for him than he's ever had before in the Attorney General's office. And this really first-of-a-kind action today was rocketing across the world of news.
We are following unprecedented breaking news involving former President Donald Trump.
The New York Attorney General just hit Donald Trump with a $250 million lawsuit.
New York's Attorney General, Letitia James, alleging widespread business fraud.
Filing a lawsuit against former President Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka Trump, and Eric Trump.
Documents don't lie. And documents don't forget.
This is tough stuff for the Trump organization. There's no question this is a dark day for them.
Dark and tough for them because of the exhaustive receipts. The lawsuit has over 200 fraudulent actions or misleading valuations. The penalties could go up to $250 million. Trump and his children could be barred from doing business not only at the Trump Org, but from really running any New York company. That's one of the punishments that James is seeking. The family and organization could also not be allowed to get money anymore, to get liquidity, to get bank funding in New York, a big deal. Trump has always said he's a deal maker. And let's be clear, he convinced a lot of people with understandable props, actions, funds, support from the banks. At times, the New York legal and governmental community really largely looking the other way. And by the way, that includes a lot of registered Democrats in New York who fill out some of these offices. So a lot of people in America thought, well, he is this rich, and he must be somewhat good at business. So this hits him legally. It also hits the core promise and brand he's ever made, what you see on the front of the buildings. It also touches on his most high-profile properties, Trump Tower, 40 Wall Street in Manhattan, where James says he doubled the valuation, that's not a rounding error, claiming something that was worth $200 million should be $530 million. Seven Springs, which is an upstate property, Trump said $250 million. It was 10 times more than what James thought were comparable properties. Mar-a-Lago, Trump said $739 million, according to James' new case. She says it's worth, no shade, no disrespect, it's not worth $739 million, no matter how large it is, or $500 million. Or $200 million, or maybe $100 million. James says, and there'll be a court process to find out whether she's more truthful or he is, but she says it's just $75 million. Or Trump Tower, which I mentioned, Trump said $800 million. James says that should actually be factually valued around $200 million. Now, why do we have to go through each of them? You might be watching at home and say, Ari, I think I knew Donald Trump lied about his properties. Why is that breaking news? Well, the answer is, this is not about what you kind of thought or assumed or what was obvious from his bluster, and it's not about whether he ever told fables on The Apprentice, which was carried on our sister channel NBC, by the way, full disclosure. You're allowed to go on entertainment programs and tell all kinds of stories. This is about whether he lied to the government, lied to the authorities, lied to the banks, lied to the IRS in ways that meant you had to pick up the tab and you, the honest taxpayer, if you are paying your taxes, you pick up the tab while he runs out on the bill and then claims to be a billionaire. So where do we go from here? Well, we have the experts to walk us through it. I'll tell you the most important thing we're going to get to in more depth, which is the criminal referrals. We'll hit that later this hour. But right now we have Professor Melissa Murray from NYU Law and former Watergate prosecutor Nick Ackerman. Professor, you know, we try to keep it clear around here. I mentioned that a lot of people are familiar with the idea that Trump doesn't always tell the truth. And that, at times, that's legal. What's different here, you know, you can hold this up this way or you can hold it this way, it's really quite a voluminous case, is documenting the ways that she says lies were illegal. How strong is this new case?
I think this is a really strong case going forward. It's almost 220 pages, and it details, in really granular details, the degree to which the Trump Organization overinflated the value of almost all of its properties in its New York holdings in order to secure more favorable loan policies, more favorable loan terms, and also to take advantage of tax breaks, for example, for conservation easements by being able to write off the difference between the alleged value of the property and what would be donated, because they didn't actually recoup that value by selling it because of the conservation easement. So it is actually staggering how much is here. She's done a very careful job meticulously organizing and documenting all of this. One thing I did notice here is that she also notes that a number of criminal laws might have been broken, suggesting that this is not just going to be about civil liability, but that there may be possible criminal exposure down the line as well.
Yeah, and I mentioned that too because that's so interesting, and we'll get to that. Here's a little more of what she said today.
White-collar financial crime is not a victimless crime. Everyday people cannot lie to a bank about how much money they have in order to get a favorable loan to buy a home or to send their kid to college. And if they did, the government would throw the book at them. Why should this be any different?
Nick?
But she's absolutely right. And this case, I mean, actually, is just staggering in terms of what Donald Trump is facing. And the reason is because he wound up taking the Fifth Amendment to every single question asked of him. If you go through that complaint, I guarantee you that he was asked about each one of those allegations.
Right.
And he basically said, I refuse to answer on the ground that a truthful answer would tend to incriminate him. That can be used against him in the court. I mean, I don't see how any way he gets out of this. I mean, he is backed into a corner. And if I were the AG's office, I wouldn't even make a deal with him at this point unless he's willing to give up everything.
You mentioned that here we have in 2007, the way when he was forced to testify, this deposition, he would sometimes. He didn't run from everything, but he would say, quote, my net worth fluctuates and it goes up and down with markets and attitudes and feelings, even my own feelings. What does it tell you that James so methodically pursued this and got him to sit down, held him in contempt, and then got him to, which you can use in a civil case, duck? And she says that shows something.
Well, I mean, she was very dogged on this. I mean, she did not give up. She took each one of these. If you look through this huge complaint, I mean, there are very specific allegations. They've got him in meetings. They've got him being told certain things by various people. He's involved as the guy, the capo de tutti capo of the organization that runs everything. And I guarantee you, again, he was asked about each one of these. And each one of these, he took the Fifth. That really puts him in the soup and kind of ends the case. I mean, I just don't see where he goes with this. I think that if these are the allegations they've got and these are the allegations they question about, and he took the Fifth Amendment on each and every one of these, he's looking at the $250 million. He's looking at being barred from doing business in New York State. He's looking at having a monitor put in charge of all of his companies. His children are going to be barred. I mean, there's nothing good in this for him at all. And it certainly doesn't come at a great time with the midterms coming up. I mean, it's just another one of these Trump situations that's out in the open, in addition to the classified information, in addition to January 6th, that is going to put the focus on Donald Trump going up to the midterms, which is exactly what the Republicans don't want.
Yeah, you mentioned that timing, and of course, Professor, the timing is partly delayed because of Donald Trump's many tactics. He gave his response today. He also attacked her. He can give whatever response he wants. He's also tried to say it's a witch hunt, it's political. I'm curious what you think of that on the merits. There can be prosecutors who are called into question. They're not above reproach, but it's interesting with James because with regard to politics and the different parties, you know, we have a headline to remind folks, if you followed the case of a very popular, one time, very popular Democrat, if you go back far enough, Andrew Cuomo, she pursued that case just as she's taken on Trump.
mean, she's really been the model of a prosecutor here. She's taken on people on both sides of the aisle, people who supported her own candidacy. I mean, she's really not been bound by any particular ideological constraint. She's really pursued the law here. And again, she's been very careful. This isn't a criminal prosecution. It's a civil suit, which means that the standard of proof is going to be lower than reasonable doubt, going to be likely preponderance of the evidence, which is considerably lower, easier to prove for the government. And it means he may not be going to jail, but as Nick says, he's probably going to be disgorging vast amounts of his current property, and he's going to be barred from doing business in the state of New York, essentially, if you read the terms of this complaint and if a judge and jury agree that this is the appropriate remedy. So she's really done a good job sewing this up, making her case, and making sure that she is above the fray. He can call this a witch hunt. He can call her a witch, but he can't say she's wrong on this.
Right, and it's ultimately going to be the judge that's going to have to adjudicate. Did she ask for too much? Did she go too far? Do they think it's an overreach? Or is there a strong case here? And one thing that's probably not going to move that judge is name-calling, but much more a question of, if you have a defense, Mr. Trump, and you didn't want to offer it in the deposition, can you offer it now? Why are these things being valued at quadruple, quintuple the rate? Why is there evidence that you misled the government? And why should other people who have less money than you pick up your tab? All fair questions. Professor Murray, Nick Ackerman on a big news night. Thanks to both of you for kicking us off.
Jesus. Okay, wait. I don't know what happened here. We just got cut off here. Now, this is what happened with the Attorney General. Now, what happened is the Attorney General said, well, you know, we need to do something about this. We can't have this man just doing whatever he wants. So Cohen, the judge that got rid of it, he said, well, we'll have a special master. Special master? Why do we need a special master? So the special master will sort out all the things. But you see, they never use special masters to sort out classified information. The special masters don't have the credentials to do a special master. But hey, she was the coach. She was a special master. And this orange man in the jumpsuit, oh, great, agreed with it. And they agreed to a special master. And in comes Judge Deary. And Judge Deary said, okay, gang, who wants to tell me what they got? And the DOJ says, okay, listen, this man's got so many classified, so much classified information, we can't even talk about it with you. So they asked the orange man in the jumpsuit people, and you know, we can't talk about it. What do you mean you can't talk about it? You brought the claim. You came to us, said you wanted to stop this. How the hell can you tell us you got to stop this when you are the one who brought the suit? This is what happened. They got with the wrong man, Judge John Deary. Yep. Okay, wait a minute. Let me get in here. Okay, here we go.
I'm Ari Melbourne. We begin with the Trump team and the Justice Department in court today with the special master actually pressing on Donald Trump's lawyers for evidence. NBC reporting that the judge was basically skeptical of the thrust of the Trump argument, pressing Trump's lawyers for refusing to substantiate Trump's claim that the declassified Mar-a-Lago documents somehow, that there were declassification claims that could be supported. Indeed, the judge seemed doubtful of this entire defense, telling Trump's lawyers, you can't have your cake and eat it too. So there may be a bit of a rude awakening now that the special master is on the job. Again, you might have heard me say this if you follow our coverage. There was a procedural step that the Trump folks got, which did slow things down, and they wanted that. But procedure is not how you win. It's not how you get out of the clear. It just is a step, a process. And now that they have to deal with this actual judge and deal with a special master and deal with what is still a fact-based court system, well, you can see they're already having trouble. Then you have something going on in Florida where many of the courts lean conservative. You had a chaotic start. Bloomberg reported that many people who dialed in did not actually mute their phones, Bloomberg calling it a descent into chaos, although that might be a bit of a headline writer's overstatement. People were then screaming at people to mute, and then someone saying, God bless America. Today's hearing comes on the heels of Trump attorneys pushing back against, again, something the special master that they sought then demanded, which was, if you did declassify stuff, and again, that could be a valid defense if true, well, which things did you declassify? So, is that a hard question to answer? Again, I'm not trying to give shade. If a president, as president, declassified a bunch of stuff, well, that's, under the law, a good defense. We could debate whether they should have, but legally, you'd say, done, declassified. But if that's your defense and you can't tell us, or in this case, special master, that you requested, you can't tell them what you declassified, that defense is kind of evaporating in plain sight. Then you have this scuffle over the DOJ's review of these materials. There's an argument about whether the documents with classification markers, does that negate the privilege claims? Trump's arguments here are basically throwing a lot of different stuff at the wall. New York Times also reports that one White House lawyer, you might remember from the January 6th hearings, Eric Hirschman, warned Trump late last year that there could be legal liabilities, basically trying to help him and saying, in other words, just give the stuff back. Now, he was also on the inside when they were plotting various ranges of efforts to either stall the January 6th certification, overthrow the election, or even stage coups. So Hirschman, while not the most famous lawyer, you've got Barr, you've got Giuliani, He was one of the people in the White House counsel's office that we really only learned more about from those powerful hearings and his own testimony about pushing back.
What they were proposing, I thought was nuts. Flynn screamed at me that I was a quitter and everything, kept on standing up and turning around and screaming at me.
Let's get into it now with former federal prosecutor John Flannery. Welcome to the beat, sir.
Good to be with you.
Absolutely. I mentioned the procedure because while it is the type of law that is the most boring, I believe it's an important substantive distinction from did you steal documents? Did you lie to the government? Are you in trouble? That's all over here on substance. And they have not, and you tell me if you what you see, but they have not defeated any of those concerns yet versus should there be a double check? Can you get to extra time? Can you pause certain things? They did, I would argue, procedurally get that ground. Now they're in court and it's not going as well. What do you see?
I think they're probably saying, please don't throw me in that briar patch. But they wanted this judge. They wanted to have this matter before him. And he has a reputation, and I've never appeared before him, but he has a reputation in the Eastern District of New York as being by the book and not anyone's patsy, if you will. The motion that starts this whole thing is Rule 41G. You have two prongs to challenge a search. And it is, one, there was an unlawful search and seizure. There's never been a credible claim of that here. And the other is that you want a return of property, presumably that you have some right to, like a passport, perhaps, that was mistakenly taken. I don't think they've solved either one of those, but Judge Cannon has opened up this whole thing. And the only thing that a special master would normally look at would probably be the attorney-client privilege materials, whether or not they were privileged. And that's difficult in some ways because if there's a crime ongoing, like having documents you're not entitled to have, that ongoing crime would make any, quote, alleged privilege evaporate. So that's the toughest question that you would have here. The second part is if you want this property back, it really had to be yours. And I don't know why lawyers have to say things like possessory interest, but Trump has no possessory interest. You know, we kill the language because we don't want to understand what's going on. So he does not, he's not entitled to that document that has to do with nuclear possibilities in some unknown foreign land that may compromise all manner of things, including national security.
Yeah, I'll jump in to say, you know, this is important because the special master is there on the error rate. If there are errors, and there can be in human endeavors where many people are involved, then absolutely anyone, any search subject, including Donald Trump, deserves to get back anything taken in error. But that's what I'm calling that review. The larger question of the boxes and boxes of stuff that the DOJ signed off on by Garland and overseen by an independent magistrate say are stolen goods. Whether he's prosecuted for it or not is a more difficult question. For reasons we've reported on the show, the president's role there is different because there was access to intel. Very different from, say, a coup. You can't say, well, a while ago I had access to... No, you can never stage a coup. What he did on the 19th would be legal, maybe illegal on the 21st, and you could imagine prosecutors making prudential judgment not to indict. Or if they feel they were obstructed along the way by lawyers and ordered by the former president, so they could make that call. But my point being, all of that is on the substance. When you go through the master and this process, it's now seeming to shift, as I mentioned. And so you can finish the point you were making about 41G. I also want to get your reaction to this rather extraordinary exchange. Again, stuff they might not have wanted to lean into. Trump lawyers acknowledge Mar-a-Lago probe headline could lead to indictment. Washington Post reporting on this saying they write, they don't want Deary, the special master, to force Trump to disclose a defense to the merits of any subsequent indictment. And they describe that as the Post view is that that's just a remarkable statement that acknowledges the possibility that Trump or his aides could be criminally charged. Your view of that?
Well, it seems the trustee has said what a good criminal defense lawyer would say. I don't want to give you anything that could be used against my client because we appear to be on a track to be prosecuted. And, of course, I mean, the judge basically said you can't have your cake and eat it too, as you said in the introduction. He said, There's a burden. You have to come forward. Was this an unlawful search? Is this your property? And if you can't prove it, then I'm going to rest on the fact that I have prima facie evidence that this is information, data, documents, high secret, top secret, that is not yours. Belongs to the executive. You are not the executive. Get over it. You lost the election. Biden's the executive. And so this is simpler than it's been written and talked about, because people, maybe unlike you and I, who are not lawyers, don't get at the truth of it. What is really going on here? What's really going on here is an old-time defense that Judge Deary knows a lot about, which is justice delayed is justice if you're the defendant and you hope that anything will happen, including the fact that somebody will get in office, even if not you, and give you a pardon. And that's what's going on here. And in response to the judge's calendar, there was a November date. And the judge in his proposal said he would have all this done by October 7th. And Trump's lawyers were pushing to change that date in a letter they sent to him, I believe, last night or early this morning. So, you know, this is Trump at his obstruction best.
Yeah.
And
you remind everyone, with the nuance we're accustomed to, that at the outer edges, the procedure can become substantive if, yes, you can run out the clock to the point that you evade justice. But it's not the judge's first rodeo. John Flannery, we have a lot booked tonight, so I'm going to let you go, but I appreciate you kicking.
Now, remember, this all happened this week. This didn't happen over a month, but see, it was all leading to this. The man has lied so much. He's lied so much. He's lied so much. The classified information isn't classified if I say it ain't classified. I can declassify it just by thinking it. By thinking it. You can declassify information by just thinking it. Oh, I want to declassify our military secrets. Because I thought about it. Page is fine. You want to declassify it. But you know you're the president and you can declassify classified information. But the problem is other people have to know. You can't declassify our spies in Iran by saying, you know what, these guys are no longer spies. What happens then? You don't tell the people out there in Iran? You don't tell the CIA? You don't tell the Department of Intelligence? You don't tell anybody? Just you? You can just think of it? And you have your double cheeseburger, you say, you know, I don't want to declassify that. No, that's not the way it works. He said, oh, you know, Trump said, oh, you know, a lot of these things are, people declassify this stuff all the time. No, it doesn't work that way. Here's what Michael Cohen said.
Donald Trump is facing this legal heat from several directions, and we are joined, as mentioned, by Michael Cohen, the former personal attorney and Trump Organization vice president. I'm going to tell you exactly why he's here and more, but let me also tell you everything that we're balancing. You have the attorney general making this massive fraud case. We're going to get to that because, as mentioned, Mr. Cohen, in public, to Congress, and here at Times on the Beat, has laid out some of the case that led to that. But we're actually going to begin with the story we haven't hit yet tonight, and that is Donald Trump's other big problem down in Florida around what are, according to the Justice Department, stolen top secret documents. Now, Trump has Truth Social, and he speaks in certain ways, but he gave a more lengthy television interview, which he actually has not done lately. You may remember when we talked about some of the Fishers over at Fox News. He hadn't done one of these in a while. So he spoke with Sean Hannity, making a range of claims. Some might work for PR, but were not 100% true. Others were bizarre and would probably get dunked on in court, like the idea that a president can formally declassify top secret documents, which can involve human intelligence, spies, lies, or deaths. A president might be able to do that just by thinking it.
A president has the power to declassify.
Correct.
Okay. You had said on Truth Social a number of times you did declassify.
I did declassify, yes.
Okay. Is there a process? What was your process to declassify?
It doesn't have to be a process, as I understand it. You know, there's different people say different things, but as I understand it, it doesn't have to be. If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it, because you're sending it to Mar-a-Lago or to wherever you're sending it. And there doesn't have to be a process. There can be a process, but there doesn't have to be. You're the president. You make that decision. So when you send it, it's declassified. I declassified everything.
Now, there was a lot sandwiched in there, but I'm playing just the key part. And if you were doing an interview and you were independent or objective, you would ask them, I don't care what party they're in or anything else, if somebody said this, you would follow up and say, did you just say that thinking is the way you declassify it, which raises the question, how would anyone else outside your brain know? Take a look.
If you're the president of the United States, you can declassify just by saying it's declassified, even by thinking about it.
Think about all of it. We are joined, as mentioned, by Michael Cohen. He is the host of the Mea Culpa podcast and the author of the soon-to-be-released Revenge, How Donald Trump Weaponized the U.S. Department of Justice Against His Critics. That's coming October 11th. And Michael, as you may know, sometimes the books we mention do okay here, so people can go learn about your book. Welcome back to The Beat.
Good to see you, Aaron.
We're going to get into all of it, more than one thing, including the case that I mentioned you sparked. But first, your reaction to what we just heard from the president.
You know,
the former president.
Watching him on Hannity, it actually saddens me because it's so ridiculous. I mean, he was always odd and he was always different. He was an enigma. But this is just nuts. And there's no way to describe. I'm thinking it, therefore it is. You know who has that sort of ideology?
Mm.
A king,
mm.
A monarch, a dictator, a supreme leader. I thought it, therefore I can do it. It almost reminds me of like in the Ten Commandments. Remember Ramses? So it has been said, so it shall be done. He's able to declassify things with his mind.
Mm.
It's truly an amazing thing. I personally think that there's something wrong.
Well, shout out to the Ramses reference.
Yes.
You know, Sunday school perhaps. That's fair. When you did work for him, did people play along with this kind of thing? It's almost like, to pick a less important example, someone thinks they ordered coffee. The waiter says, oh, no, you only ordered eggs. You didn't order coffee. But some waiters go, oh, I must have not heard your order, because
mm-hmm.
that's how they kind of smooth through it. And on little things, it may not matter. Is that the style, or does this remind you of how he was when you worked for him?
No, this is a whole nother level mm. of insanity. Yes, he would turn around and say, you know, to the girls, get me a Coke. And he would yell it out. He wouldn't turn around and try to do it through telepathy.
Right?
I mean, that's basically what he's saying here. Through telepathic powers, I have the ability to declassify top secret documents. And it's really scary that he's even able to find time on anything other than his own Truth Social network within which to pass this nonsense.
Mm. Then they went back and forth about the FBI. He has been all over that issue at times, really speaking in ridiculously offensive or even dangerous ways. But then he tries, as you notice, sometimes bring it back. So here's an exchange about the FBI.
I really believe that most of the people within the FBI, out of the top groups, most of the people in the FBI, they probably voted for Trump. I don't want to have anybody hurt.
What do you hear there?
Again, Donald playing the victim. Boo-hoo, right? Let's all sit there and cry. The FBI raided him with a valid warrant. What else did he say about the FBI? I think they may have planted the documents.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the stuff that, oh, he doesn't care if they're Republican or Democrats, but if they obviously voted for me, I don't want them to get hurt. He doesn't care about anyone. It's all, again, self-serving. Everything that he does is self-serving. The fact that he took documents, that's a crime. But then he didn't take them, but he did. And then they do a warrant, they take it, then they find all of these blank jackets of top secret information. We know one is definitively nuclear. We don't know which country. For all you know, it could be Israel. And it could have been given to Mohammed bin Salman. Now I'm hypothesizing.
Well, yeah, you don't know that.
Of course not. But I'm just using it as an example. You know why I don't know? Because nobody knows. And the point is, we're not supposed to know.
Right.
That's the whole point. We're not supposed to have this conversation, Ari, about what top secret documents this lunatic took
yeah.
from the White House against the Presidential Records Act. hid in the basement, that we're not supposed to be thinking about things.
Right,
like, because exactly, it's a level of danger that you shouldn't have from someone who had that job. The last one on this, and then we're going to turn to James, where I really want to get your latest views. But at one point, Hannity starts to wonder whether Trump was suggesting that he, Trump, secretly had Hillary Clinton's emails. I know it sounds hard to follow. After you watch this clip, it won't be any easier to follow, but here we go.
There's also a lot of speculation because of what they did, the severity of the FBI coming and raiding Mar-a-Lago. Were they looking for the Hillary Clinton emails that were deleted, but they are around someplace? Were they looking for the spying on Trump?
You had it, dude.
No, they may be saying, they may have thought that it was in there.
Okay.
And a lot of people said the only thing that would give the kind of severity that they showed by actually coming in and raiding with many, many people is the Hillary Clinton field.
Did he land that Hillary Clinton jujitsu or not?
No. It's typical Donald Trump deflection. It's never me. It's not the fact that I gave back a box. I had my lawyer attest to the fact that there were no more at Mar-a-Lago. They somehow figure out that there is documents still there. They get a valid search warrant. They execute it through the FBI. They come in, and guess what? They took documents that he wasn't supposed to have on top of that in unsecured location. And this is a real serious problem because it jeopardizes our national security. And that's a problem when you have a president that truly doesn't want to be the president. He wants to be the king.
Now, next we're going to turn to why Donald Trump is probably more upset with you than just about any other person.
Sorry.
From the new case that was unveiled yesterday. We have our shortest break of the hour. I don't think anyone's going to leave on us right now, Michael. Michael stays. We have 1 minute break, and then we get into the James case and the shout out she gave Mr. Cohen. We're back in 60 seconds.
I will remind everyone that this investigation only started after Michael Cohen, the former lawyer, his former lawyer, testified before Congress and shed light on this misconduct.
Attorney General James, citing Michael Cohen, my guest, one point she was making is that she's following the facts and you unearthed some of them, rather than the attack that somehow she set out to do this.
Mm.
Now that she's landed this case yesterday, and she says it started after your testimony, what do you see in it? Does it follow the leads that you provided?
Absolutely. I mean, the problem that prosecutors have always had as it relates to Trump, the Trump Organization, is that there are only a handful of executives in the place. And they never were able to figure out, it's a privately held company, regardless of whether it's $1 billion or, as he would say, it's $10 billion. It makes no difference. Understanding how the Trump Organization works, the methodology that's used in the inner workings of the company, that's what I provided, along with, more importantly, documentary evidence. Remember the 2011, 12, 13 personal financial statements. I provided them the roadmap into what they were used for, and that, I believe, is part of the basis of this 200-page indictment.
Yeah, a roadmap, and you mentioned that there's a finite number of people, Mr. Weisselberg, now convicted. Here's what else she said. Take a listen.
Mr. Trump and Mr. Weisselberg would meet to review and approve the final statement every year. Mr. Trump made known through Alan Weisselberg that he wanted his net worth reflected on the statements to increase, a desire Mr. Weisselberg and others carried out year after year.
Yeah.
Does that match your experience?
Yes. And I discussed it with them at length, and I provided them documentation, including the personal financial statements. That was obviously important for them, because what it did is it gave them the ability to take the documents that I provided, not just to them, but to all the various different congressional committees, the House Oversight Committee that it was posted up live on. And what they did is they tracked it back. For example, the craziness about his triplex apartment, 33,000 square feet, highest price ever attained. In fact, the whole building's not worth that amount of money, and it's never seen that type of money. They then did it with Seven Springs. They did it with Mar-a-Lago. They did it with virtually every single property, including his golf courses. So that's the big problem.
When you see her act where others have not, including the DA case, which famously got to Weisselberg but not beyond,
Do you think it's something different about James? Do you think she has been better? Because as you just mentioned, you've cooperated with more than one probe.
Right. I think Tish James is fantastic. I think she is an incredible attorney general and an attorney general that I wish every single state in this country had. I actually wish Alvin Bragg had been a little more Tish James, though I'm going to give Alvin a little bit of leeway as we now in October have the case against the Trump Organization, and you and I have talked about this, mm-hmm. that you cannot separate the Trump Organization from Donald.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not Weisselberg Org.
Correct.
It's Trump Org. Yes. So at a certain point, the authorities have to get in there. Final question to you, knowing him well. Where do you think his head and emotions are at today when he sees the prospect that he could really be booted from New York business, not him or his kids able to run any business here?
Yeah. It's not the business that bothers him. It's the loss of what will be the money. And one of the things you talked about at the beginning is that she's seeking $250 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's not accurate.
Mm.
What she said was the baseline of $250 million. Knowing the documents the way I do and knowing exactly the fraud that was going on, I see the number between $750 and $1 billion.
Because you think that the penalties that she's attaching to what has happened would actually go up?
Yes. This is a baseline.
Interesting. Mr. Michael Cohen, it's not me saying it. It was the Attorney General leading this probe saying, look, it's not whether they like you or not. It's that they found you and the evidence you provided credible, which kicked off her investigation, which now is a big deal. So you're a person back in the news. I appreciate you coming on the beat,
and I
sir.
Thank her for it. I
yeah.
really do.
Thank you.
And I thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Michael Cohen. Coming in.
6103, we have a caller. You have a question.
Yes. Yes, good afternoon, sir. How you doing?
Fine.
So my name is Mike. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a conservative.
My name is Mike
and,
also.
Oh, perfect, yeah. So I'm a conservative. Obviously, you're a liberal. And I find it fascinating, this whole thing with Trump, right? And mm-hmm. I think there's a mistake that liberals are making when they're approaching this thing with Trump. They seem to think that, let's say hypothetically Trump gets indicted with something. Let's say this lawsuit goes through, he can't do business in New York or whatever. Let's say the search at his house with the documents. Let's say that all goes through. Let's say Trump gets indicted. Let's say Trump can't even mm-hmm. run for president again, 24, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think people left, and this is from my personal experience in dealing just because I've seen people in my family that are very liberal. I'm sure you know what I'm saying. But so what I sense from them is they think that if that happens to Trump, that this like political movement will just evaporate as well. And I think that's a
what
real
political,
miscalculation
what political
on that
part. Well, hold on, back up. What political movement?
This national populist movement.
Well,
they seem to
what?
Think it'll go away.
No,
in
well,
America
wait,
right
well,
now,
hold, but you got to say, wait, I need to go back. What political national movement? This is a cult.
Yeah.
This is not a movement.
Let me explain.
Go ahead.
Because, again, you brought up a great point. That's another mistake people on the left are making, which is
okay. They
think that this is a cult of personality thing. For some people, it might be, who just are fans of Trump. But politically, there's an actual movement, and I'll elaborate in detail for you quickly. There's two populist movements uprising in America currently today. There's a left-wing populism, and then there's a right-wing populism. The leader of the left-wing populism movement is Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, people who would consider themselves progressives. They are pushing a left-wing version of populism, right?
Okay.
And on the right, there's a right-wing version of populism that is also known as economic nationalism. People have different terms for it. But they essentially agree on certain key points, right? They're against the welfare state that we have for corporations and how corporations have partnered with the government to essentially protect their own interests and being like we saw with the bailouts in 2008 and so forth. They agree that there should be a higher tax rate on corporations. They agree on certain aspects. They obviously disagree on certain key issues as well. But there's core fundamental things that they agree on. And they're both rejected by the establishments in both the Democrat and Republican Party. The Democrat establishment rejects the left-wing populism. They're against that whole movement. They pay it lip service, but ultimately they want it to be a small thing. They don't want it to be in control. And on the right, the GOP as well was, if you remember back in 2016, they were very much against it. They were trying to fight it off. But, you know, because of Trump's popularity and his name recognition, he was able to bring it over the top. And now it's become entrenched. And I'm saying this as someone who's in the conservative side, I'm telling you, on the Republican side, it has become fully entrenched. Now, it's growing on the left, by the way. On the Democrat side, the left-wing populace, they're growing. The progressives, they're expanding. And it's just a matter of time before they take over the Democratic Party. It might be within the next few elections. I think they're almost there with candidates like Mandela Barnes in Wisconsin. I think Fetterman is in the same camp as well in Pennsylvania. I think for the first time in the Senate, you're going to get legitimate left-wing populist progressives in the Senate, right? Usually it's only in the Congress, but now they're starting to gain a foothold there. So the process on the left is just taking longer to get there, but it'll get there eventually, right? The only problem for them is they didn't have a popular celebrity to help them, or they had Bernie Sanders, and, you know, he's popular, but only to a certain degree, whereas Trump had way more name recognition to the mainstream general public. If the left-wing populist can find someone, it could be Oprah Winfrey, it could be whatever, just find a popular celebrity that has high name recognition to be the leader of their movement, then they'll take over the Democratic Party. That's all they're missing. So that's just to explain what I was talking about once about movement. Now, the people that are against it are corporations and the establishment. Why? Because they are the ones that are at most threat if either left-wing or right-wing populism wins. They're the ones that are going to take the biggest hit because they're going to lose power, they're going to lose money, they're going to lose influence. And so that's why they fight against it on both sides. They fight against it on the right, they fight against it on the left. And the fight began during the Occupy Wall Street movement after the bailouts in 2008. Because if you remember at that time, there was widespread agreement with people on the left and the right that those banks and the corporations should not have gotten bailed out at taxpayer expense. You remember that. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. Go ahead.
All right. And so in response to that, corporations, people on Wall Street, you know, the big money donors realized, okay, we have got to find a way to not allow for the left and the right to come to some type of a consensus against our interests, right? So what they came up with is, we need to come up with a new way to divide, to keep the left and right separate, and not allow for economic populism to gain a foothold in America. So what they started to fund was more divisive issues that they knew would divide the left and the right and would divide groups of people against one another. And that's why you see the left all of a sudden started to shift its focus towards LGBT, things like that, issues that they knew would be more divisive, that would be harder to get everyone on board. Because think of it like this. This is my last point, and I'd love to get your response. I had this discussion because I used to work at the DNC here in my home state, and so I have a lot of friends that are political insiders that work in the DNC and in the RNC, and so we have these conversations all the time. And I always say to them, political party in America could figure out how to be socially somewhat conservative while economically very liberal and populist. Whatever party can get a hold of that will dominate politically in America. Because America is, like, from a cultural standpoint, people still hold to more traditional views. You know, I'm talking about America as a whole. But they agree with aspects of the left's economic points, especially when it comes to the corporatocracy we have going on in America today. And so Trump tapped into that to a certain degree. Bernie was starting to tap into that. But after Bernie ran in 2016, unfortunately, he dropped the social conservative side, because prior to 2016, Bernie was pro-Second Amendment. Bernie was anti-illegal immigration. Bernie was, in a lot of ways in agreement with Trump. He was anti-TPP. He was against the World Trade Organization. He was adamant that we need to bring jobs back to America through tariffs, very similar to Trump. It wasn't until once he got in bed with the DNC after the 2016 election and primary run when he was, you know, he essentially had to cave in on these issues where he changed it up. But prior to that, he was on the same trajectory. So now if whatever group figures that out is going to win, and now the corporate groups that are financing politics, they know this as well, which is why they're so threatened, which is why they're using different forms to try to shut it down. And this is why they're attacking Trump, by the way. Because it's not about political corruption, because all these politicians are corrupt. Biden's corrupt, Trump's corrupt, Obama's corrupt, Clinton's corrupt, Bush was corrupt, Reagan was corrupt. I'm telling you, someone who's a political insider, all these guys are getting money under the table. They all are. Every one of them. Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, what's the Republican guy? I can't forget his name. The guy in Kentucky, the turtle guy.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
You know,
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, all of them are. I mean, his wife, right, Mitch McConnell, his wife is involved in so much corruption and so many backroom deals. It's unbelievable. So I'm not – that's why whenever people play this, oh, gotcha game, it's like, no. It's selective enforcement of the law. If they were serious about handling corruption, all these people would be going to jail. But they don't, because if you play the game with the right people, you'll be taken care of and nothing will happen to you. If you upset the wrong people, then all of a sudden corruption becomes a problem. You understand what I'm saying? If corruption only matters if you upset the wrong people in power and the wrong people in certain positions. Otherwise, you can do whatever you want under the table. I mean, with Epstein, that's just show you what you need to know. They knew what was going on with that guy and all that, so they knew all that was happening, right? They knew that. People that were involved were people that were playing ball with them. You understand? So what we need to focus on as a country, regardless if you're Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, independent, whatever you may be, what we need to focus on is economic populism. I don't care if it comes from the left or the right, because economic populism is when we, the citizens, the common people, can win against the corporate elite that dominate our country and control our politics. It has to come through either one of them. One of the two avenues is going to be the thing that's going to break them and level the playing field for us. It's got to come through one way. Ideally, it would be great if it came from both at the same time. That's the ideal scenario. But it's got to happen by somebody. And people in America have to be aware of what's going on. They have to be aware that these mega corporations control our government, their special interests and lobbyists. They control it. That they formed a partnership with the federal government to benefit themselves. This is a serious matter. And so this next election is all about that. These midterms, when I'm going to let you know, and you may not like this, it's going to be a Republican landslide. I want you to understand this. And I'm not saying this in a competitive manner, like, oh, rubbing it in your face. No. I'm just telling you it's going to happen. And it's going to be that, not because the people are supposedly Team Republican all of a sudden. It's because the Democratic leadership in the Democratic Party, in the DNC, they have so much partnered with these corporations, it's disgusting people. They are completely in bed with them on a level that is shameful, because the Democrats are supposed to represent the working class, and they clearly decided that's not the case anymore. They view the working class with contempt. They view the quote-unquote uneducated non-elites as this unwashed mass of people that are too dumb to know anything, and they're not worth our time, and who cares about their issues or about their plight. It's all about their cosmopolitan elites and their whole, you know, that whole little ivory tower they've created. It's all about them. They've forgotten the working class completely. Because if they cared about the working class, Bernie Sanders would have been the nominee in 2016 if they were serious, but they're not. So now they're going to get a repercussion that they brought onto themselves because they rejected the people they claimed to represent. And those people now view the Republicans as more representative of them. As hard as it is to believe, it's the reality. I work on the ground with people who do, you know, a lot of internal polling for political groups, who do focus groups, who talk to people, who do canvassing, you know, door to door. I talk to them, and they tell me people that have been lifelong Democrats all their lives, that would have never in their life would have ever dreamed they would vote Republican, they're telling them they are going to vote Republican straight ticket for the first time in their lives. All over this country, it's happening. Now, for whatever reason, the mainstream media is ignoring this or, like, trying to downplay it. I'm telling you, this is going to be a red wave of epic proportion, and it's going to shock the country. Because the people who watch the mainstream news, you're not going to see it coming. You're going to be stunned and not understanding how it happened. And I'm telling you it happened because the Democrats forgot the people that they're supposed to represent. And so I'd love to get your response. I apologize for going long-winded there, but I'm passionate about this. Because this is going to affect our children and our grandchildren. This is the most serious thing we could possibly talk about. More important than sports, more important than whatever's going on right now with whatever little, you know, news cycle they got going on. What matters is the policies that are made in these next two elections. Because they will affect the future of our country more than people can even possibly comprehend.
All right. I appreciate that, what you were saying. Now, I am a person who's had security clearance, secret and confidential. I don't know if you've ever had one.
Yes, I've had a security clearance. I worked in intelligence and in the military.
All right. You know darn well Trump never would have gotten a security clearance. But he got one because he was president of the United States. This man took documents to Mar-a-Lago and said, I can declassify by thinking about it.
He's not the first president that took in classified documents once they left office.
Wait. We ain't talking about anybody else. We're not talking about anybody else. We're talking about him right now.
No. What I'm saying is, like, how does that affect you and me and people's lives day to day? What does that matter?
Let me finish. It does matter. People don't think about the granular problem. If he can do this, you don't think he can do whatever else he wants?
Give me an example of how it could affect anyone's life.
Wait a minute. Because if he can get away with doing this, why can't he get away with taking you and taking your house away from you? Why can't he? He can do whatever
Why would any politician take somebody's house? Why would that happen? Who would ever do that?
Why would any politician take government secret documents to a
Why did Hillary Clinton had a private server with classified information?
Wait. Hillary Clinton was not president of the United States. And it was
she was Secretary
was
of State.
Government.
She was
so
Secretary of State.
Secretary of State is not the same thing as President of the United States.
But
she's
handling classified documents.
No, she's not handling the stuff that the president was handling. No.
You're not answering my point. My point to you is the same way it doesn't matter that Hillary Clinton had a private server with classified documents.
Because it doesn't matter that Trump
took classified documents. They don't matter.
Because it doesn't affect your personal life.
No, it doesn't.
Wait a minute. Hillary Clinton did not take any information with her. She did not
take
it.
She mishandled qualified information documents. That's a fact.
Wait a minute.
Come on, man. Stop.
Wait a minute. There were 60 investigations into that, and they never showed one time when anything that she took was illegal.
No, come on. Did you listen to the press conference that James Comey gave in July of 2016?
Did you listen to
when he explained the case?
Said,
yes.
I heard everything he said.
He said, let me give you a quote, she did violate the Espionage Act, which was what was the basis of the case, but they could not establish intent. That was the reason she got off. It wasn't because she didn't commit a crime. They said they couldn't establish whether she was intent in doing so. That's what was at stake. Was her intention?
But that's a crime.
No. You didn't hear what I said, sir. She violated the Espionage Act because she had classified documents on a private server, which is against the law.
But they could not establish criminal
intent. Yes, it is, sir. You cannot have.
No,
you can,
no,
yes,
no,
you
no.
work in intelligence.
They did not,
you know this.
Listen,
you cannot have classified documents on a personal server.
Well, you can't have classified documents in your desk drawer at a private club either.
You're not answering my point, man. The point was that she did the exact same thing. She had it in her private server, classified information.
Then why wasn't she prosecuted?
Okay, now I just told you why. He explained why. Because
they
couldn't establish intent. Let me ask you a question. Why did Hillary instruct her aides to keep hammers to destroy the phones she had? Why did she have her server? Yeah, look it up. Don't take my word for it. You can check. You can fact check me on the spot right here.
I'm not taking your word for it. You're wrong. It was never proven.
No. Listen. What do you mean? It was on record. What are you talking about? Look it up. No, no.
If it was proven.
No, don't take my word for it. You can look it up right now.
Listen,
no, fact check it because just, this is not a matter of opinion. This is an actual fact. She had her aides carry hammers and instructed them to destroy the phones if someone with a warrant arrived to take them. Look it up right now. Prove me that I'm wrong. You can do it. It'll take you less than a minute.
That stuff heard on Fox News. Stop that nonsense. That is not
true. No, not on Fox News. Come on, stop it. This isn't about Fox News. This is a fact.
Rather than talking about it,
just look it up and prove me otherwise. You can do it.
We're talking about Donald Trump.
The point I brought up was that it doesn't matter.
That doesn't matter because he did it. because he
no,
did.
No, no, no. I
so
said I said the same way it doesn't matter that Hillary Clinton had mishandled classified documents. It's the same way it doesn't matter that Trump did, because it doesn't affect our actual lives. It doesn't affect
it
you
does
and I
affect,
and everyday people
does
out here
it,
who are trying
does
to who are trying to pay. It doesn't affect
because,
them in the least.
Listen,
give me one example
man,
of how handling.
I'm gonna give you right now. Give me an example right
okay
now. When he claimed that Mar-a-Lago was worth $739 million, and it was only worth $75 million. How many people do you think that hurt? How many people?
Well, hold on. How does that affect you? That affects his
listen,
pocket. How does it affect your pocket?
You can't ask me a question when I just asked you a question. How does that not affect the people around
it doesn't
us
affect anyone at all. Not in the least.
Oh, okay,
it doesn't
good
affect my life. And I, now tell me, how does it affect your
that
life?
You know,
I want to hear this.
That you know. Okay.
Well, tell me.
One is,
I know for a fact it doesn't.
One
you
is,
tell me how it affects
one,
yours.
Let me tell you. The monies that would have been collected from fees would have helped the people in New York City and state. He,
wait,
he
hold,
cheated,
how?
He,
if it's a private business
because,
deal
wait a minute,
between
wait a minute,
between
wait, it's not a private business deal.
He wasn't taking taxpayer money. What are you talking about? This is when, this
money
is private
wait
business.
Oh wait, he the property's worth $75 million. He downgrades it so he can get major credit and more interest, and then he upgrades it when it's time to upgrade it. But he don't upgrade it $5,000, $1 million. He upgrades it $75 million, 75 times, I should say. You can't
okay
do that.
Okay, again, so you get to tell me how it affects your personal life at all. I want to hear this.
Because the monies that would have been collected from state and federal fees could have helped people in the state.
Okay, so it would have affected you because of what? You didn't explain that part. How does it affect you?
Why does it have to affect me? It could affect my next door neighbor.
That was the question I asked you, because I told you it doesn't affect me. How does it affect you? And you said it did.
So
I'm waiting for you to explain me how did it affect you.
Because
you
there
told
are
me
people
that originally.
There are people who could have used some of the revenues that would have been collected in their
oh
life.
So you're saying because the government didn't take as much taxes from him, therefore that's what you're saying.
That's your
argument. Okay, so now let's address that. So for example, when Amazon tried to open a business in New York, what was on the table that
don't
the New York State offered?
Oh, wait a minute. We know what corporations do. We're not talking about corporations. We're talking about Donald J. Trump. Talking about him. Don't bring another corporation. We know corporations do this all the time. But he's not supposed
okay
to be a
corporation. Okay, so let's think about this. So let's start with this. So
okay,
he was claiming that his property was originally worth, it's actually worth $75 million. He claimed it was worth $750 million to get a higher valuation that he used to leverage
correct
to get credit to take a loan
absolutely
from a bank. That's
right
how that works,
right?
Gotcha. So if the property is worth $775 million, for example, when New York State evaluates property tax, they have their own methodology to determine what a property is worth, right? Do you pay property tax? I pay property tax. I know.
Right.
Whenever you purchase
right
a property beforehand, it's already established what's the yearly tax rate on that property when you purchase it at the time of purchase, right? Like I'm in the process of buying a property right now. I already know out front what's my yearly tax rate on that property. That's already stated out the gate. So the government has
right
their own evaluation process to determine what the tax rate on that property. So, for example, I can't go to a bank. Let's say I'm trying to get a higher loan, and I'm trying to blow up an evaluation of a property that I'm trying to leverage to get a certain amount of credit line from the bank that I want to use to invest and do whatever, right? Now,
right,
you can say that's corrupt, and I agree, to use – essentially, it's kind of using fraud to – deceive the banks to give
kind,
you a larger loan, right?
Kind.
Yeah, but this happens.
Kind,
this happens all the time, though.
Fraud.
Number one.
Hmm?
This happens all the time, though. But at this point, at that point,
yeah,
you're talking about that's on the bank's due diligence to make sure to evaluate it properly, because that's the bank's money. That's not tax money. That's on the bank willing to let to loan out money to that individual based on an evaluation. So, you know, for I work in banking, and so when it comes to giving out loans, the bank has to do their due diligence to evaluate everything themselves before they shoot the money out. I mean, that's obvious, right? So, but when it comes to the property taxes, he can't go to the state government and say, oh, guys, my property's worth $750 million, not $75 million. Because if he were to do that, his property tax rate would go higher. He would actually have to pay more money in tax if you claim that. So it,
no,
was, and it would actually be in his best
to
interest to claim
no,
that his
that
property
a,
value is worth less.
No, he does that to get a better break on the interest rate and to get more loans and to get a better loan.
Yeah, but that's on the banking side.
The more money you have, yeah, but where do you think the bank gets the money from? They ain't pulling it out of the air. They're taking it from someone else
who
has a chance to have some of that.
No, no, but that's separate from the property tax. Because you remember when you brought up the point about the higher valuation on his properties,
right,
you were
right.
saying that by doing so, that was going to withhold tax revenue from the people in New York that would go to help people that, you know, depend on social services, which is, I agree on that. But what you failed in your point there, which you didn't, you know, kind of dish out properly, was that having a higher valuation would have led to a higher property tax rate. His property tax rate would have been higher, not lower.
Right.
That's the point you're missing out. So, for example, if I claim the property that I'm going to sell now, like I'm purchasing a property, right? If I go and I say now and I want to sell it, instead of it being $750,000, if I say, okay, now my property is worth $2.5 million, and I claim that, now my tax bill would more than double as well than what it was originally planned at. That's what will come with it. So having a higher valuation wouldn't help you on the property taxes.
No,
that's my point. That's why your logic doesn't connect.
No, it don't help you on property taxes, but it helps you by getting other things granted to you. It helps you get a lower.
Yeah, when it comes to banking, yes. When it comes to getting loans, I agree. But that's different than withholding tax revenue. That has to do with you dealing with a private bank and basically fooling them to give you more of their money. I mean, because at the end of the day, if Trump were to say that Mar-a-Lago is worth $750 million and it's worth only $75 million, any institution that would lend him money based on that evaluation, that means that they themselves did not do a proper evaluation of the property and they were fooled.
Doesn't also mean that that's fraud? Why is it fraud then if it's all right? Why is it fraud?
No, I didn't say it was all right. I said it was wrong. I agree that it's wrong, but my point is that
that doesn't affect a common citizen
like you and I.
But why is it fraud?
The bank.
A fraud affects anybody.
No, it doesn't affect you at all, sir. That affects the bank who's loaning him the money, and that's on him. And if they feel like the evaluations were off, then they can do their due diligence, go with law enforcement, settle it in court, and it'll be dealt out. That doesn't affect you and me. How does that affect you and me?
All right. So, but it affects you and I when he does the downgrade back to $75 million.
No, it doesn't. How?
Because he does that in order to get more monies. It's no longer worth $739 million. It's now worth $75 million. Now, it's worth $75 million.
Okay, are you talking about from a tax standpoint? Are you going back to that again?
Yes, I'm going back to the tax standpoint.
Okay, so now we're getting back to the root of it once again. When it comes to property taxes, sir, have you ever paid property taxes? I don't know. Some people haven't, but have you?
Of course, I pay property taxes.
Okay, so when it comes to your property taxes, does the government base your tax rate on your property on your evaluation of your property, or do they have their own evaluation to determine how much you have to pay in tax?
Well, it depends, because right now I pay I don't have my place up to what it should be worth, so I pay lower property taxes.
Yeah, but I'm saying who's the one that determines what the tax rate should be on the property?
The county or the state?
Exactly. That's my point. So it's them that determine. It's not like, for example, you can go into the office there and tell them, oh, guys, my property is worth X amount. This, therefore, you should tax me at this amount. It doesn't work that way. They know they have their own evaluation. That's my point. So it's not like Trump's going to the IRS and telling the IRS, hey, guys, my property is worth this amount, therefore you can only tax me at that amount. They don't do that. They have their own evaluation, and they determine what the property is worth, therefore, and then from that is when they determine what your tax bill is going to be.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, I understand that.
Okay,
understand,
so that's my point.
See,
so you get what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. What I'm saying is, though, if you're not paying the correct property taxes, that means the city or the county is not receiving the correct property taxes from you. Therefore, they can't do what they need to do in the county and the state.
Okay, great. That's a great point. Now, let's go there. Now, did Trump not pay his property taxes? Is that what you're trying to say?
Of course he didn't.
Well, how do you know that?
When he did pay him, because that's one of the fraud. That's one of the things that she's brought up.
Sir. That's a separate issue. Now you're talking about tax evasion. Tax evasion
is
a crime, okay?
Is
Trump being charged with tax evasion by the New York State?
Not yet.
Okay, so that's my point. So if he's not being charged with tax evasion...
We don't know.
Okay, so that's why I asked you, because remember I asked you, did Trump not pay his property taxes? You said he didn't. And then I asked you, how do you know he didn't? If he hasn't been charged with tax evasion and it hasn't been proven in court, you can't say he hasn't paid his property taxes.
That's
essentially slander. You don't know that. That's my point. You can't say he didn't. That's why I asked you. You said he didn't.
Here's
you said it matter-of-factly like he didn't.
We only heard there's a 225-page document out there that the Attorney General has presented to the...
I'm familiar with the charges. I understand
okay,
what's in the case.
Now,
so my question to you was, because remember, originally I asked you, did Trump pay his property taxes? You told me he did not.
We don't know yet.
No. Okay, so that's different now. That's a different answer. Okay, now you're saying I don't believe it, which is the truth. We don't know, right? Just like if you would ask me, I would say I don't know. But to say he didn't, that's a statement of fact. So just to be clear, for everyone listening, no one knows if he did or not. Therefore, anyone saying he didn't, that's essentially slander because speculation, you have no idea. Now, when it comes to this tax records that we do have, remember, Rachel Maddow got a copy of his taxes from 2005. She did a special on this. I think this was way back in about 2018 or 2019. You can look this up. But someone had given her a copy of his taxes from then. And according to that copy, in 2005, I believe Trump paid about $32 million in taxes. That's on record that we know, because that's the one copy of his taxes that people have a physical copy of, that the general public has a copy of. So in 2005, we know he paid $32 million in taxes as a fact. That's not opinion. That's not speculation.
Right.
That's a fact. Okay.
All right.
So now, when people say things like Trump committed tax evasion or Trump didn't pay his taxes, it's like if you don't know it to be a fact that it was handled by in court or that the state officials, the government officials, haven't made it clear, then to say otherwise, even if you don't like the guy, people have to understand that's called slander. That'd be no different than if somebody said about
that's
you
right.
that
but
you didn't pay your taxes.
About 2005. The Attorney General is taking this case from 2011 up to now. And
yeah, it has to be settled in court.
They're going to get... Because
in America, it's due process,
it's
right? Everyone, no matter how...
You're jumping
the shark here. You're putting the cart before the ox, right?
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Right. You get what I'm saying? Like, okay. and this, regardless of what you feel about Trump or Biden or anybody, me, you, any person, every person in America should be granted due process and have their day in court to settle whatever accusation or allegation is levied against somebody. That's just the basic tenet of America. So regardless of how you feel about Trump
do you believe he's going to court? He is not going to court. He's going to settle.
Well, until it's done, sir, we can't. My point is, people have to, when it comes to talking about things that have to do with law and legality and taxes, people have to be careful to not use their emotions to blind their judgment and make matter-of-fact statements about something that we don't know to be a matter-of-fact yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, when I asked you about his property taxes, you'd have to admit you did kind of jump the gun and say, oh, he didn't, And then you did have to acknowledge, well, we don't know. Because until it's settled in court, no one knows. So, and this applies to anyone, right? For example, on the Republican side,
right,
a lot of Republicans are already jumping the gun about Trump, about Biden, about Hunter Biden, about the laptop, about all these corrupt business deals that have gone down in Ukraine and China and so forth. And yes, there's evidence to enough to make speculation, but I always tell people on the conservatives, I always say, hey, guys, until it's settled in court, until there's been a full investigation into it, you can't say these things like it's a matter of fact yet. Things have to be settled in court, just like with the Russian collusion matter. I told all my liberal friends, it's like, you guys are jumping the gun. Just wait till the investigation is done, then let's see the
jumping
evidence.
Jumping the gun.
And
we got 35 like, seconds left. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
But I hope you feel like we had a reasonable discussion. I understand you and I are on opposite ends of the political spectrum.
But I try to be reasonable with people and try to see, you know.
Okay. But I appreciate your time. So, and I just feel like if people talk to each other more and stop playing Team Democrat, Team Republican, I think we'd find out that we actually agree on a lot. And there's actual real policies that we agree with that could actually benefit everyday Americans and could really bring a positive change to the country.
Everything that traffic will allow.
Okay,
no way could you get that.
Have a great weekend. Have a great weekend, everybody. And thank you for calling in. You can call in anytime.
They are long. Stay on your dressing room, they understand. Let's go on with the show. The costumes, the scenery, the makeup, the props, the audience that lifts you when you're down. The headaches, the heartaches, the backaches, the flops, the sheriff who escorts you out of town. The opening when your heart beats like a drum. Closing when the customers don't come. There's no business like no business like no business I know. You get word before the show has started that your favorite uncle died at dawn. And how about that your partner I have parted, you're broken hearted, but you go on. They are low, even with a turkey that you know will hold. You may be stranded out in the cold. Still, you wouldn't change it for a sack of gold. Let's go on with the show. Let's go on with the
Alan Weisselberg, Ron Lieberman, and Matthew Calamari.
And where will the committee find more information on this? Do you think they need to review his financial statements and his tax returns in order to compare them?
Yes, and you find it at the Trump Org.
You find it at the Trump Org. What? Oh, the public learned the first time it got exchanged, and others like it, to write a key insight into the Trump organization, the pattern of shady business practices, in terms of popular charges, the metaphorical hurricane of late charges. Donald Trump, Eric Trump, Peter Trump, the Trump extramarital pattern of fraud and deception that was used by Mr. Trump and the Trump organization for their own financial benefit is astounding. Inflating the values of assets by whatever means necessary to increase Mr. Trump's purported net worth. I will remind everyone that this investigation only started after Michael Cohen, former lawyer testified before Congress, shed light on his misconduct. Before we begin the hour, joining us now, Trump's former personal attorney and former vice president of the Trump Organization, Michael Cohen, is also the host of the Man Couple podcast and the author of the forthcoming book, Revenge, How Donald Trump Weaponized the U.S. Department of Justice Against His Critics, is out next month. And I want to get to, if you're willing, to sort of pull back the curtain a little bit about those kids. But I guess the first time we've had a chance to talk to you about you as a connective tissue, and she mentioned you, she thanked you for your cooperation, and we had a sense, I think from Donnie Deutsch and others, that you were very cooperative with the multiple investigations into Trump. Did you think it would come to this lawsuit that you saw this week?
Well, I didn't think it would be a 200-page indictment, to be very honest with you. I am extremely thankful to how tenacious and how just our fierce Attorney General Tish James, shout out, was extremely, I spent over 400 hours speaking to 7 different congressional committees, law enforcement, Attorney General, District Attorney, and so on. And to be recognized and acknowledged for it was extremely, it was appreciated.
Did you, I mean,
but I never thought there would be a 200-page indictment.